Chapter 1. Lauren. Camp Wallace, Unicoi, Tennessee, Day 127.
"That doesn't look like a romance novel,"
Lindsay said, pulling out the stool across the counter from Lauren Wallace. Lauren pointed over her shoulder to the coffee pot warming on the newly installed Pioneer Princess wood cook stove.
"Would you like a cup of coffee?"
Lauren asked. Lindsay poured herself one and returned to the island that separated the kitchen from the great room. Lauren was working on county business, mostly trying to salvage their plan to restore critical infrastructure, beginning with getting the electric grid working. In the 4 months since the lights had gone out, and without a functioning government, things had spiraled out of control in northeastern Tennessee and the rest of the state. Those who had survived this long not only faced starvation and disease, but they were forced to defend what little they had from the constant threat of raiders and thieves who could often strike with impunity.
"I thought you were supposed to be relaxing," Lindsay said.
Relaxing had been Angela and Mrs. Miller's suggestion after Lauren had begun having headaches.
"Reading a romance novel in front of the fireplace isn't going to get the lights back on,"
Lauren said without looking up from the stack of papers in front of her. Life should have improved significantly for the residents of Camp Wallace and Unicoi County after Sam and his teams eliminated Nigel Corbin, his father Preston, and Ralph Cross, returning Unicoi, Irwin, and Johnson City back to their citizens. The Northeastern Tennessee State Police, under the direction of Mark Seaver, had been reasonably successful in reestablishing law and order in the major towns from Bristol to Kingsport, down Interstate 26 to Johnson City, Unicoi, and Irwin. However, the areas in between remained lawless lands. In the absence of a functioning government, the void created by the deaths of the dictators who had risen up after the EMP had been filled by roving militias and raiders who all operated with their own rules. Traveling from city to city was like running the gauntlet. It resembled places in the Middle East where people were forced to travel in large armed convoys to thwart road bandits and kidnappers. This lawlessness was hindering the region's efforts to recover. It was making things even more difficult for Lauren, as the territory's mayor, to restore essential services like electricity and running water. Things had gotten even more dire after Governor Ava Glidewell had sent troops into Knoxville, Tennessee, and essentially kidnapped the team Lauren had assembled to work on a recovery plan there. Lauren had spent the last month attempting to continue the work she'd started, but with little progress. As a result, she was growing increasingly discouraged. Lindsay picked up one of the three-ring binders Lauren had managed to hide from the National Guard soldiers sent to retrieve them. She thumbed through it quickly and placed it back on the kitchen island.
"I thought you'd given up on that. I mean, since the governor sent in the National Guard to confiscate your experts, how are you going to manage something like that now?"
"Didn't your parents ever tell you that where there's a will, there's a way?"
Lauren asked.
"Nope. All they ever told me was to stop punching Buddy French in the face at the back of the bus if I wanted to stay out of jail."
Lauren chuckled at the memory. She had lived next door to Buddy most of her life. He and Lindsay had never gotten along. Until recently. After the two had worked together to save Lauren and her parents during the Unicoi riot, they'd called a truce to their decades-long childhood feud.
"How is Buddy, by the way? Have you seen him lately?"
"He's skinny as hell, but he seems fine. Benny put him to work in the produce warehouse logging in vouchers,"
Lindsay said.
"I need to ride into town and talk to Benny. We're having issues getting enough water to the settlement, and I need to see if Mr. Mitford can find a solution. He never finished bringing the water pipe down the mountain to provide running water for the town. If we can get people back to work on the water project, we might be able to set up a central collection point for both communities."
"That sucks. I can't believe we're back to hauling water."
"We were never set up to support this many people,"
Lauren said. Camp Wallace had grown to over 100 people, but was initially supposed to be just a small settlement for fewer than 20 people.